This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in. On the program today, I welcome your questions for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet and nutrition. And I welcome your phone calls for Susan. If you'd like to talk with her, give us a call. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She's a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness, and she is the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. You'll find her on the web at www.eatandmove.com. That's EATNMOVE.com. She also has an office at Strawberry Fields in Urbana. Questions about diet and nutrition? Give us a phone call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Keeping warm?
I'm trying.
Did you have a good breakfast this morning, then?
I did. I had a good breakfast and a nice cup of coffee and now a nice cup
All
of tea.
Right.
So
very good. Well, you mentioned or you suggested that we talk a little bit about probiotics this afternoon.
Right.
What are probiotics?
Well, probiotics are becoming more and more, I think, interesting to people in this country. But basically, I think of probiotics as good bacteria that we can take in, whether it's in a product like yogurt that we might typically think of the lactobacillus or other good bacteria that's in typically in yogurt with active cultures, or certainly in supplemental form, or there are a lot of different yogurt drinks now, or kefir, a kind of a fermented milk drink that's available too. And even now there's some of these good bacteria that are in things like cereal and other products. So the idea is that the probiotic or the good bacteria may help keep your gut healthy. And we certainly know if your digestive tract is healthy, then and if it's working well, then we might see things like you're less constipated or even your immune system works better in some of these studies that have looked at some of these probiotics. Some of the early studies, and the reason I think I originally got interested in it was just things like diarrhea. There are a lot of studies in diarrhea in kids and finding if they have a probiotic that might lessen the time that they, you know, have to go through that. Or you might hear of things like if you're on an antibiotic, for example, you should always take yogurt, which is true. You should always have yogurt daily, or you should take a probiotic supplement because antibiotic also kills a lot of the good bacteria.
Stuff, yeah.
Right, the good bacteria as well. So that would be one indication, you know, we say, well, for sure, anybody who's taking an antibiotic probably will benefit from a probiotic, whether it is in supplemental form or something like yogurt.
And there's a lot of research underway in terms of, could this boost your immune system?
Mm-hmm.
Could it help prevent certain cancers?
Right.
Colon cancer?
Mm-hmm.
Could it also be of help for people who suffer from Crohn's disease?
Exactly, or irritable bowel syndrome. Mm-hmm. And even I've read some research, too, looking at, well, would there be a role for probiotics perhaps in obesity? In other words, if you're digesting food well, if, you know, things are moving along well, does that affect calories that you're utilizing and those kinds of things? So I think a lot of the research is still coming along, but we're seeing a lot more products available on the market and foods that are marketed more for their probiotics, too.
Okay. Now, as I understand it, there are a number of different types of probiotics. That is, strains?
Mm-hmm.
Would that be the right word?
Exactly.
So how do you know what you're getting, and what does this look like on a label? I would imagine food manufacturers are going to tout this.
Right, right.
But are they all created equal, and how much would you have to have in a product for it to be of benefit?
Yeah, well, those are all the real big questions. There's a review, and this is really timely because there's a review in Nutrition Action Health Letter, which is the newsletter put out for the Center for Science and Public Interest. Most people think of them as the food police, but they're, you know, they're the ones who maybe have these reviews that come out on how much fat's in your movie popcorn or how many calories are in Mexican food or something like that. So it's kind of a bummer sometimes when you read those things. But actually, you know, it's good information. And they have a review in this month's newsletter where they go through a lot of different foods that are out there, and they'll say, well, what type of bacteria, let's say, is in it? And they all have different ones, partly because different companies have the patents for these different bacterial strains and how they're utilized, or they might just have certain ones that they use in their products. So there are different ones that have been studied to do different things. And so that's kind of the trick, is that perhaps taking a what we might call a broad spectrum probiotic, in other words, it might have 5 or 6 or 7 different strains in it, then of course, well, are you getting enough of each one? We don't know for sure. But if you're trying to keep your gut healthy on a consistent basis, kind of makes sense maybe that you would have something like a yogurt that might have several different strains in it. Hmm. In which case you might get more of a broad benefit as well. The supplements may be anywhere. I mean, there are supplements that will be 1 billion bacteria or 2 billion bacteria, and there's different amounts. So I don't know that we really know the answer to that as far as how much is enough. There are, you know, companies, and one of the yogurt I brought is Stonyfield Farms. One research review that was out a few years ago, I recall, It actually went through different yogurts and different supplemental probiotics that are on the market and said, well, are they really active bacteria? In other mm-hmm. words, you have to have the bacteria that's not dead. It has to be active so that when you eat it, mm-hmm. it'll actually get to your gut and work. And so on that one review, Stonyfield Farms was one of the ones that came up and said, yeah, this is good bacteria that is workable in the gut. And so if you look at a product like this, like a lot of yogurts, they'll have a kind of variety. This is our exclusive blend of 6 live active cultures, and then it lists them, most of them Acidophilus, Bifidus bacteria, and several other ones. And so, you know, that's kind of a good bet to say, if you like, what I tell clients is if you like yogurt, choose a yogurt that says on there it has live active cultures, maybe more than one bacteria in it, and try to have it daily. Or even better yet, maybe you have half of this twice a day or something. But the idea is that you're keeping the bacteria in your system, or you're trying to have it daily or almost daily. And for some people, that's really doable. They like yogurt anyway, and they might have it daily mm-hmm. or almost daily. So that certainly seems to afford some benefit.
Yeah. Can you get too much of this stuff?
Well, I suspect that if you supplemented with a lot, and again, I don't really know how much is too much, but if you really went crazy on it from a supplemental form, mm-hmm. that maybe there'd be some potential. I've never read anything about that, but I would suspect maybe there's a possibility. But there's so much bacteria. I think I was reading from some information from Harvard, which is kind of funny to think about, but they said here an estimated 100 trillion microorganisms representing more than 500 different species inhabit every normal healthy bowel. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And so actually more, they were saying that there's more bacteria in our system than actually cells in the body. So of
wow.
course this, and we, so the idea is really you try to keep the good bacteria
right.
there and available. And there's also thought some of these probiotics like Activia, which is one of the brands that's out now that you see in all the stores. And in the review in this Nutrition Action Health Letter is kind of interesting because Activia is really promoted kind of the thing that you see on the new or on the ads is that it's going to maybe decrease gas or decrease cramping or something
bloating.
Like that, bloating. And evidently the study that was done on this actually just increased transit time of the food. So in other words, if they could track the food that you ate and if you took the Activia, then it actually went through your system faster. It didn't measure the gas or anything like that. So we don't really know from that study if it did decrease gas, but we do know it moved food through the system faster, which may help, of course, with constipation. It might be better for your gut if you don't, you know, if you're moving mm-hmm. things through faster. So that makes sense, too. But it seems in reviewing some of these things, there might be 1 or 2 studies on a particular bacteria, and then maybe that's marketed. So, again, we probably have a long ways to go. But there are a lot of scientists who really do believe in the benefits, and particularly, again, for things like diarrhea or if somebody does have irritable bowel. Or I've had a lot of clients who've had Crohn's disease or irritable bowel, and taking a probiotic really helps them. It seems to help them, along with other things they're doing, because they seem to maybe manage gas better and also just keep their gut running better.
Okay, very good. Registered dietitian Susan Kundrot is our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. If you've got a question for her, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with a listener now. Caller in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Good chilly afternoon, Dr. Susan.
Hello.
Now, could you fill us in on all the brouhaha over resveratrol? This is the after the Harvard Medical Review of resveratrol. The entire supply has been totally eliminated in the United States. This comes from the Bordeaux grape. It's very rare, and I'll hang up and listen to your answer. It's just been selling like crazy. Thank you for taking the call.
Thanks for the call. It's effective in mice, apparently, but we really don't know about humans. You want to talk about this?
Well, resveratrol certainly is a potent component, like you're saying, in certain grapes, and particularly the red or the dark purple or dark red grapes. And people take it for a lot of different things in supplemental form, too. I think the bottom line for this is, you know, we know that there are a lot of very potent antioxidants that are found and potent phytochemicals that are found particularly in things like red grapes, purple grapes, blueberries, you know, fruits and vegetables that have a lot of color in particular. And so certainly we think that there's a lot of benefit, maybe cardiovascular benefit, maybe cancer protective benefit. I think the studies, again, from what I've seen, are still early, but there certainly may be benefit. And we think about, you know, we hear a lot about red wine and maybe the benefit of alcohol in general for, you know, for example, the alcohol issue for maybe reducing cholesterol or increasing good cholesterol and HDL cholesterol. And so I think it's one of those things that certainly, you know, we probably know less and less when it becomes in a supplemental form, but when we know when it's actually in the food and that basically in food in general, that it can be perhaps a benefit. And so it's kind of along those lines that we say, well, is resveratrol being a beneficial component that we're finding in these purple grapes or red grapes? It's the idea that, gosh, you know, eating more of those foods, eating more this idea of eating with color, eating more purple, red, green, orange, you know, mm-hmm. dark color, bright color foods is probably number one as far as what I would recommend. And then also keeping your eye on some of these particular components, like this one in particular, that may have some additional benefits. And so I think it's really interesting. And I think, you know, I'm certainly a believer that there's no one thing that we need to be doing. But we do need to look at, gosh, what's coming out of some of this research in terms of these specific components.
Let's talk with another listener, also in Urbana, on line two. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I was watching WILL TV Friday night, the great performances, and then I segued into your weather, and then before I decided to give it up for the night, Pericone Weight Loss Diet Program came on. And I watched this guy for a little bit, and he's a dermatologist, he said, and he noticed that his patients were so radiant and how they were suddenly losing weight, and I thought to myself, red flags. This doesn't sound to me like something I want to spend my time watching, and I thought I might be healthier going to bed. I did. Next morning I got up and I entered Pericone Weight Loss into Google, and up comes one of the websites was something called Quack Watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I see he was on a second time. It was on Saturday as well with his 7 Secrets to Beauty, Health, and Longevity. The Quack Watch website seemed to me to be quite detailed and documented about this guy, and I thought to myself, why is PBS using this guy? We've apparently made $4 million in fundraising in the past on his programs, and I thought, it's sad. I'm hoping that PBS will I'm kind of passing along a complaint and asking word to be passed along to PBS to have somebody who knows what they're talking about to check out people like this before putting them on. I think it's hard for a lot of us to sort out. Our hope gets in the way of our blank detectors.
Yeah.
You know, the fraud detectors sometimes. And any time that I see somebody making a lot of money over supplements, which is apparently what he does, is charges, he has his own supplements and charges huge amounts of money for them, I think something's not right here. I haven't seen anything about this in the literature. So I just wanted to pass that along. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. I saw a little bit of that program on Friday night, too, and it was pretty amazing because he was offering us something for everything.
Yeah.
Stay younger. Your skin will be beautiful. Mm-hmm. Your joints won't hurt, and so on and so forth. So I will pass that concern along to the folks in television, and I would suggest that the listener do that as well. Mm-hmm. A note to WILL-TV would be in order, I think.
Yeah, and I haven't ever seen that one, partly because I probably do turn, maybe not watch those as much, because I think in general, you know, what you want to think about, some of these products, this is what I find, some of these products may have some good components in them, but generally it's like you say, when it starts to look like it would be a cure-all to everything or something, then you know, well, that's probably, you know, not going to be reasonable. And so that is tricky, and I kind of am the same way. I think it's very difficult if you're selling all these things to not fully believe in them, and I think it's easy when, and there are going to be some people who are nutritionally really at a deficit where they do start taking one product or another, and they do feel better because maybe they haven't had a good balance of nutrients for a while, and if it has a good multi as well as other things, that might be beneficial. But yeah, I think it's good to be cautious, kind of.
Look at credentials.
Yeah.
Look definitely. At. Motivation.
And I think look at research. That's one thing to check on websites too, which I find very frustrating. Sometimes I'll have clients taking certain things, and if I get on the website, this happened the other day when I was working with an athlete, and they were taking a particular supplement that was saying that this format, it was a creatine supplement, saying that this particular format of creatine was better than what we've seen with creatine monohydrate. And it was kind of interesting because last summer I'd gone to a big conference all about protein, amino acids, creatine in athletes. And one of the main researchers there at the conference was down at Baylor and was studying some things. And I remember him specifically saying that we know almost all of what we know about creatine is creatine monohydrate. That's really the form of creatine where almost all the studies have been done. And on this website, they were highlighting this very researcher from Baylor, the same one I had heard speak in the summer, saying that this new formula of creatine is by far above and beyond what you could ever find in creatine monohydrate. And I just found that very interesting because I just heard him say, you know, we've got to look where the bulk of the studies are and their creatine monohydrate. So I'm guessing that they didn't get his, okay to use that information or something on the website, because it certainly wasn't at all what he had said. So anyway, so it's very, and there really weren't the studies to show it. It just was quoting some researcher, but you couldn't really see the study. So that's the other thing I look at, you know, where's the research? Is it, which is really difficult to try to sift through all that. But if it's a new product, we have very little research on. And then that also means we have very little information on potential side effects, which is the other thing I always look at from the safety standpoint.
Yeah. What's the claim for this particular?
Well, the claim for this particular creatine is that it will get into your muscles faster, you'll feel it faster, you'll actually train harder because it gets in the bloodstream better and it stays in the bloodstream and is sort of moved to the muscle where you need it a lot more quickly, which physiologically is, you know, questionable as well. We know with creatine, for example, if you do need extra creatine and if it is reasonable to take it with your goal of increasing muscle mass and you're doing the type of training that you might benefit from it and you don't have enough in your diet, then you take it consistently on a daily basis and you build it up gradually. So there's, to me, kind of, there wasn't a real reason to try to get that rush of creatine anyway. So it's probably more of a marketing situation, but a lot of athletes are very interested in this because it looks like it's going to make them
get
stronger faster.
We're so human.
We are so human. That's right.
We love it when it sounds good.
Yeah. Somehow we have to make, you know, I think that's a big challenge, is kind of making eating well and eating, getting things from food sound really exciting and sexy almost, you know, so people can say, gosh, you know, I get this. And, you know, it's the idea of resveratrol, like the caller was saying too, you know, it's no question that eating more colored produce will help all of us. There's absolutely no question. That is proven that probably from a standpoint of lowering our risk of disease and getting more fiber and all these things, it's hard to do that, but that's really, that's where it's at, really, in terms of what the studies are showing.
Yeah, it was interesting. A few years ago, I was looking around on the internet, and in terms of how different cultures, different nations, how they put their food recommendations together, and we have the pyramid. And one country, and I want to say it's France, I don't know. I could be wrong, but they had a palette, you know, an artist's palette.
I think it was France.
You know, and if you have your plate, if you look at it like a canvas, and it looks beautiful.
Right.
And I'm not talking about how it's stacked up.
Right.
I'm talking about color and texture.
And that's very true, and that's very basic eating. That's what it is. It seems, you know, and I've talked to people who've come to the U.S., and that's probably the biggest change that they say, depending upon where they've come from, but almost every other culture, when they come here, they're just amazed at the amount of food we consume. You know, really the amount, if it's someone who has the means to eat well, they're generally eating too much. And I think that is so typical. And I think the idea of getting back to more produce, more whole grains and all those things that we're trying to work towards is just really what we need to be focusing on. And it's difficult because as we get going and we're more in a hurry and all those things, it's harder to eat like that.
It's too simple too,
right,
isn't it?
Right. we gotta find a catch for it.
Yeah, we're looking for that magic potion, that magic pill, that fountain of youth. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and on the program today, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. Listeners, if you'd like to join us this afternoon, if you've got a question or a comment, 333-9455 is the number to call in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Anything else in the news lately as far as diet and nutrition goes that you'd like to talk about? Anything coming down the pike?
Well, I think there's still a lot of interest. You know, I think one good thing that's happening right now with what we read in the news and things we see are the idea with carbohydrates. You know, it seemed like for a while, and we talked a lot about low carbohydrate diets, and that seemed to be such the really hot topic now. And I think it seems to be people are coming more to a balance of really realizing, okay, carbohydrates important. We don't need too much of that, just like we don't need too much fat and we don't need too much protein. But what's the difference with carbohydrates? And we're hearing a lot about glycemic index, for example. If you compare carbohydrates, how fast do they raise your blood sugar? How fast do they get into blood sugar? Which, of course, would be very important for somebody with diabetes and very important, let's say, for someone maybe exercising, because it might be that certain foods give you energy a little bit better before you work out and other ones help recover a little bit better. And a lot of that also has to do, let's say, with the fiber content of food. So I think there's been a lot more interest in, is something a whole grain? In other words, is it brown rice? You know, you look in the, and I know we've had things like whole wheat pasta that we've talked about on the show before. And now you look in the grocery shelves, there's a lot of varieties of whole wheat pasta where you never used to see that. Same thing with rice. There are a lot of varieties of brown rice now and more whole grains that you never used to see. Whole grain couscous, for example, something that's easy to make but more fiber. And so I think there's really a push. We know from a manufacturing standpoint there's a big push for the whole grains. And I think that's all really good. Excuse me, and really looking at different ways that we can boost fiber, we can boost these natural grains as well as getting more fruits and vegetables seems to be where manufacturing is going as well in terms of food.
Let's talk with some listeners now. First we're gonna go to Champaign, a listener on line one. Hi.
Hi. My husband has been diagnosed with diverticulosis and has recently had a flare-up of that, and we've checked a number of websites for diet restrictions and what we can do, and there's conflicting information regarding nuts and seeds, and I'm wondering what your recommendation is.
Well, there certainly is conflicting information out there because the general recommendations we have, and basically diverticulosis and diverticulitis. Diverticulosis is when you have in part of the gut where it's not necessarily inflamed at the time, but there might be some problems in the gut. There might be areas where there's pockets where you could get things caught in there. So if someone's not inflamed, we say, well, high fiber diet, making sure you're trying to move things along faster, maybe the benefit of the probiotics like we talked about, of course, because it's a gut issue. But when it is inflamed, the diverticulitis, then, of course, there's more problem. You need to be a lot more careful, and anything that might be little small pieces that could get caught in the gut, you're more careful of. And so some of the recommendations do say no nuts or seeds or anything small like that, or strawberries or anything with little seeds anytime. But not everybody agrees on that. Some researchers really specialists, gut specialists, GI specialists, think that it's okay. And I've had a lot of clients with this, and they get differing information from their docs. For me, what I would say is if you eat something like nuts, if you chew them well, if you have seeds and it appears that it's not bothering you, or you've done it in the past and it hasn't been a problem, and you're eating a lot of fiber, it may be that it really doesn't cause you any trouble. And when you're inflamed, of course, you want to be extra careful and probably not have those things. Probably the most prudent thing to do is to say, well, I'm going to have more of the whole grains like oatmeal and wheat bran and things like that probably are going to break down better and not going to be little pieces almost all the time. Just to be extra careful, you could certainly follow that guideline. I think probably it depends on how much you like those foods and if you've had problems with them in the past.
Okay.
Or if he's had problems with them in the past. Mm-hmm. But certainly I think what's happened is we don't have a lot of good research to say either way, and so not everybody agrees on it. And the thing that I've found with diverticulosis, diverticulitis, irritable bowel, is that everybody's really different. You know, different foods really do have different effects for different people. And so finding out if there are foods that you think, gosh, what did I eat that might have caused some problems, really staying away from those foods if it seemed to bother you or bother him, because it could be variable with the person. But I think the most prudent thing to do is probably avoid anything with small seeds, or if you do have nuts, try to maybe have more something like peanut butter in something rather than the nuts itself, where it's actually creamed, where it may not pose as much of a problem.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's talk with another listener, a caller in Vermilion County on line 4. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I apologize if you've already discussed this. I tuned in late. I am calling to ask your opinion about these immune system boosters. When you go into a crowd, there's one called Airborne, and a lot of the drug store chains have their own version of them. They're essentially high dosage of vitamins, is what my understanding is. I'm looking at one now, and it has 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C and 5,000 IUs of vitamin A and some zinc and magnesium and vitamin E, selenium, and some herbal extracts. And they suggest that if you're going to fly or you're going into a crowd, you take this. And the directions say you could take one every 3 hours, which is an awful lot of vitamin C and whatever. But do they have any good effect?
Well, I'll tell you a little story about Airborne in particular. And Airborne's probably, like you say, the most common one we see, or maybe similar ones to that. And Airborne was originally developed by a teacher, I think, who was continuing to get sick in her classroom from her kids and kind of developed this. But I was at a conference last year, and this was brought up because it was a conference all with athletes, and we looked at immune response. And a couple of the top immune scientists were there talking about immunity, and particularly vitamin C, and whether we need extra vitamin C. And it appears that, you know, from the studies, we don't have conclusive evidence that you need these mega amounts of vitamin C. Now, there are some studies to find that if you keep your blood levels a little bit higher, maybe by taking 500 milligrams twice a day, something like that, that may help a little bit with immune status. But that's not a huge amount. Like you're saying, 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C, well, There are some people, when they get to 2,000 or 3,000 milligrams a day, they're probably going to have diarrhea. They're going to have gastrointestinal upset because you can get that from vitamin C. So you see, if you would take 3 or 4 or so times a day, that could be a side effect. So you have to be aware of that. Like you're saying, that's a lot. So I think things like zinc, magnesium, vitamin A, vitamin C, they've all been looked at and in one study or another have enhanced immune function. There's no question that in different studies together, or if you take them separately, I should say, then there have been some markers of immune enhancement that have occurred in different types of studies. Same thing with a lot of the herbals, that there have been studies where there have been some certainly benefit from some of these herbals. Astragalus, for example, is one. And so you'll see these products. The big question is whether you put all these things together, has that really shown benefit? And we really don't know for sure. And so I would take these types of supplements and say, well, there's a chance that it might help. We really don't have conclusive evidence that together this type of supplement's really going to do anything. Some people just feel better taking it because they feel like they're doing something to try to prevent getting sick. But you do have to be aware that the amounts of these, if you take too many, could cause, and I've certainly known people who've taken something like Airborne and had some gastrointestinal problems and things too. So, and they've asked me, gosh, why did this happen when I was taking this? Well, it was too much vitamin C. And so that's something to be aware of. And so I'd say that they're very popular, but whether they make a big difference or not, you know, it's just like zinc with colds. There are some studies saying, well, if you take zinc, it might decrease the length of the cold. It might help. And then other studies show it doesn't. So it's sort of one of those things in short term probably wouldn't hurt you, and it might help, but we don't know for sure.
If you're eating well and you take a multivitamin with some minerals, are you pretty much covered?
Well, you're covered, although you won't get anywhere near these amounts. So, for example, in a multivitamin, you'll probably get 60, maybe 100 milligrams of vitamin C. And a lot of these products, again, you'll see 1,000 milligrams or things like Emergency that are really popular that are 1,000 milligrams in one shot. And, you know, the thinking is, yeah, maybe my immune system really needs a shot of this vitamin or this mineral that
might
enhance
it. What's in an orange?
It.
Like if you just sit down
an orange,
with a navel orange or with a couple of small tangerines or something?
Mm-hmm. That might be probably anywhere from 40 or 50 to 100 milligrams of vitamin C. So you see, if you're eating well, and you're getting a lot of, you're getting oranges and strawberries and kiwi and all these pineapple and things, that you can boost vitamin C naturally. I think it's very easy for people to keep their vitamin C levels probably as high as we think they can be in the blood from eating. And if you're eating a lot of produce, you can do that. So that's certainly something you say, well, proactively, maybe I'm going to really boost that before I go too. But these types of things, again, I think we, you know, they may be helpful. But in the same respect, we don't...
You can have too much of a good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let's talk with another listener. Caller on line 2 in St. Joe. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a high school wrestler, and I wanted to ask about protein. I'm always concerned, hoping he's getting enough protein.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about some good sources of protein and just generally other things I should be looking out for now that they're in a demanding season?
Right. Well, certainly getting enough protein is really important because especially anytime you're on a calorie restriction plan, and I don't know if he's having to really, is he having to really work to make weight?
A little bit more than usual.
Mm-hmm. Well, anytime anybody's cut calories for any reason, one reason or another, you really want to make sure your protein is okay, because what you don't want to have happen is your body start burning its own muscle tissue because it needs protein. And so in a demanding sport like wrestling, most athletes can utilize about a gram of protein per pound of body weight, which is probably double what most of us would need if we're not training hard.
Uh-huh.
So for him, let's say if he's, you know, 155 or whatever he is, then probably that number of protein grams is important. And so, you know, the lowest calorie places to get that are probably things like the really lean meats, things we'd think about, chicken breast, turkey breast, lean sirloin, pork loin, things like skim milk, egg whites, those kinds of things, cooked egg whites, because those are going to be really good quality sources but not provide a lot of calories, which is what he'd want. And then I think the other thing for wrestling that's really important is that he's eating consistently throughout the day, particularly if he's practicing after school, that his, you know, really his breakfast should be a really solid, really good meal, because that's going to be a lot of the energy he's going to be using later. And we do know also that, of course, he'd need to have a decent lunch. And so it's almost like if he thought his breakfast is really good, maybe a little bit smaller lunch,
he practices, he has some kind of recovery snack, a good dinner at night, and then maybe a smaller snack before he goes to bed, all of those that contain protein as well as carbohydrate sources, then he'd be in good shape if he's making weight okay. But I would certainly, you know, it may be that at meals he needs to look at maybe he's getting a good 6 ounces while everybody else gets 3 or 4 ounces of a protein source to make sure that we can get his needs taken throughout the day.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome. Next we talk with a listener on Line 3 in Bloomington, Illinois. Hi.
Hi. This is Rhoda. I had two things. I had heard quite a long time, and I don't know whether it was a good source, that mega amounts of vitamin C may interfere with one of the B vitamins. So I've always been a little bit more cautious about the vitamin C. But I had a question about the first topic up there with the yogurts and the various bacterial cultures. And two things. I always thought that the acid in your stomach destroyed the bacteria, and so does it make it through life?
Right.
And then the other thing with it, if Activia or any of the other cultures are making the stomach or the food go through the system faster, is it decreasing the amount of calories that the body gets out of it?
Good questions. Well, a lot of things are denatured in the stomach because of the acid, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. And there are some bacteria that can make it through to the gut and that can still be active in the gut. And that's kind of the idea. Do these cultures, are they really active cultures? Are they really cultures that are going to be available when they get to the gut or enhance the gut? And so, you know, that many nutrients will not be available, and a lot of them will be absorbed later on after the stomach too if they can make it through that acidic environment. So it does really vary depending upon what you have. We often will see, and even in some supplemental forms, we'll see things like enzymes, particular enzymes that you might take to help you digest certain things. And no question that some of those are marketed, but they actually get digested themselves in the stomach because they can't make it through the stomach to help with digestion. So that does happen sometimes.
But some of these yogurt cultures do seem to make it through.
Right, right. They still are active. They still are able to get to the gut where they're needed to be, where they're utilized. The other question that you mentioned, too, is most of the time, in some of these studies with transit time, there were studies where maybe it took 48 hours, for example, for the food to get through the system. And a lot of people, that's a long time. Their food's going to get through faster than that if they normally have faster bowel movements. But so for a lot of people, this may be decreased transit time 10 hours, I think, is one of the reviews. So you look at that and say, well, maybe it went from 30 or 40 hours to 20 or 30 hours by the time it got through, or maybe even less. And unless you're having, as far as I know from a gastrointestinal standpoint, unless you're actually, you know, having diarrhea or it's going through too fast or, you know, you're really not able to absorb the nutrients, that just speeds it through a little bit more. But I don't think that would cause any problem with malabsorption or not getting the calories or not getting the nutrients or the energy because
it would have to be pretty severe, really fast before it would.
Yeah, I think it would have to be so fast that there'd be some reason why it's not getting absorbed. In other words, you know, there might be something going on with the gut where it can't absorb nutrients, and so that's where we see the little finger villi in the gut kind of lie down and can't absorb the nutrients, and that's one reason everything goes through a little fat too fast. But in this case, I don't think in the studies that I looked at there were any problems with that.
Okay. Well, good. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And the comment or the statement that the caller made about her concern, she was always a little concerned about too much C because it could inhibit absorption of other vitamins.
Right. Well, B vitamins. That's exactly true because a lot of vitamins and minerals, you get too much of something and it starts to have an effect on another vitamin.
Throw something off, else off.
Right. And you think about with vitamin C too, if it causes everything to move through way too fast, then you're not going to absorb B vitamins or other nutrients. And very similar with, you know, with you take a lot of calcium, you take a lot of iron at the same time, and you can't absorb what you need because they're both competing for binding in the body and absorption. And so it's too much of something that can cause a problem. And we see that with other nutrients as well, where that can be a problem. One thing I thought about just a second ago, too, after the previous caller had called about the wrestling question, too, is one good resource is she could get up on the GSSIweb.com website. It's the Gatorade Sports Science Institute. It's just www.gssiweb.com. And on that website, there are some educational materials under nutrition, sports nutrition. You can pull that up. And then there's one particular handout that I wrote for Gatorade that is on weight-related sports. It's called Foods and Fluids for Weight-Related Sports, and it addresses some of the questions with wrestling. And there are a couple other handouts on there that list protein sources and things like that. So that might be another good resource if you got up on the web to pull those down for your wrestler.
Okay, and the site one more time?
It's www.gssiweb.com. And it's the Gatorade Sports Science Institute.
Okay. I suppose if you're out and about right now, and you could you just get there somehow or other by putting Gatorade into a browser?
Yes, you
probably.
Could put them. Yep.
If Gatorade you, Sports Institute, for example.
You could put that on, and I will have a new website up the next time we meet. And actually,
okay.
It links to that now, and you can get to it. And that's just, if this is easier to remember, just nutritiononthemove.net. And you can get on that one now, even though it's not completely done, and I have those websites listed on my nutrition information.
Okay, so you'll have a new website for my introduction.
I'll have a new website, and it's got WILL right on the front.
How about that?
So,
good deal.
Yeah, so it's in the works anyhow.
We've got a couple minutes left. We've got a caller waiting for us in Urbana Line 1. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question, and you may have already addressed this, but I just tuned in. But I've been making my own yogurt using the Stony Brook Farm or that type of yogurt. Am I getting the benefits of the probiotics in my homemade yogurt?
Well, from what I understand, with the homemade yogurt, I think you'd have to add this good bacteria in it, unless there's enough bacteria from the starter.
I've been using... a heaping tablespoon of like the Stony Brook Farm as my starter.
Okay. That's a really good question. I don't know the answer to that. I'm sure a microbiologist would know the answer to that.
We can find out maybe for next time.
Yeah,
I
could certainly look that up for next time because I don't know actually how long those live and how if they would just multiply and continue to be abundant or not. But that is a good question. I can definitely find that out.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You're very welcome. Let's take another call. Vermilion County, Line 4. Hi.
Hi. I just recently read something that milled flax seed was a good source, a good plant source of the omega-3 fatty acids. And I was not aware that there were plant sources of the omega-3 fatty acids. I guess I always thought they were from fish oils or something. Are there other plant sources of the omega-3 fatty acids, and how do these compare to the fatty acid that you get from fish or from a supplement? Do you know?
Okay. The milled flaxseed is an excellent source, and like you say, milled, that's the way to go either, which basically milled is the ground flaxseed.
Right.
So if it's ground up, then those fats are going to be available, and they're actually a really pretty good source because if you have, if I recall correctly, 2 tablespoons is about 6 grams of fatty acid. So that's quite a bit. It's actually a lot more than you'll find in a serving of salmon or tuna or anything like that.
Oh, really?
Right. And so it's a little, the fatty acids are a little bit different. The fatty acid chains are a little different than what you find in fish. So they may not have exactly the same function, but they're still going to be very protective. And other sources are things like soybeans. Soy is actually a fairly good source. Walnuts. As far as nuts are a real good source, soy nuts, which we think of as the dried soybeans, roasted soybeans are going to be a good source too. But probably by far the best source is the flaxseed, is the milled flaxseed. And so,
okay. Is that considered as good then as getting fish?
Well, because it's a little bit different with the composition of the fatty acids, it hasn't been studied as much necessarily with cardiovascular disease, but it's still... we think quite beneficial. And so, you know, if you eat fish too, that's great. Then you're getting a combination. But for a lot of vegetarian people,
this would be their only way, right?
Right. It'd be a
Than a supplement.
It'd be a great source. And it's a really good amount.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it's fantastic. You can, you know, one of the ways that I use a lot is I'll mix it in yogurt or I'll put it in cottage cheese or you can certainly.
Been sprinkling it on my cereal in
great.
The morning.
That's great.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Another quick question. I take hydrochlorothiazide, and I just recently learned that that tends to cut the potassium that you have in your body.
Mm-hmm.
Side effect. What are some good sources? I know bananas, I think orange juice. What are good sources of potassium, and how much potassium do you need a day? Do you know what the...
Well, really what you need is based, it's kind of individual, but what we think about, you know, if you look at the sources, we always think bananas, oranges, orange juice, things
right.
like that. But other foods, milk is actually a pretty good source. Meat is a pretty good source of potassium. If you look at most fruits and vegetables are going to be good sources. Things
okay.
like peaches are a good source, potatoes, tomatoes, those kinds of things are,
okay.
are excellent sources too. And so as far as the amount, really, you know, what we... Typically, people don't need to think about sort of adding that in unless they are on a medication where you would say, gosh, I'm going to try to increase this amount in my food. And at the same time, sometimes you do need to take a potassium supplement that might be 100 or 200% too, or maybe even more, depending upon what your levels are. So, but I would say if you're losing some, then you definitely want to try to increase those foods. And you might want to get on just, if you can get online, the USDA website. You can just put in USDA and it'll come up, and you can get the website where it actually lists food sources and the amounts in different foods. And that might be another helpful source for you.
Okay, very good. That'll do it for this month on Diet and Nutrition with Susan Kundrat. Now, first Monday in January is New Year's Day.
Oh, yeah.
It's a holiday.
Okay.
We want you to have a holiday.
All right.
So... When should we do it in January? You want to do it on the following Monday, or are you going to be around?
I think, actually, I will be gone on the following Monday. I'm going to be in San Antonio for a conference, but I believe I'll be back the Monday after that,
okay.
if that works out.
All right. Well, stay tuned, listeners.
Okay.
That would be January 15th.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to think about
okay.
that.
Okay.
I'll have to get with Harriet.
Okay.
We'll have to figure it out. One way or another, we will do a diet and nutrition show in January.
Okay.
This is the Afternoon Magazine, and our thanks this afternoon to Susan Kundrat. She is a registered dietitian, and she's generally with us on the first Monday of the month. Thanks, Susan.
Thank you.